Good evening, everyone. My name is Hugh. I'm a member of this congregation, and we're going to be reading from Mark chapter 12, verses 28 to 31, which is in page 709 of the Bibles in the pews. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them good answers, he asked him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this: Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these."
The book of 1 Corinthians recently. Just for this week and last week, we're taking a brief stop and we're looking at a topic in the Bible. I'm going to try and bring God's word to bear for you on the idea of choices and decision making. I take it that all of us in the room have choices and decisions in front of us right now. A couple of those that might be facing you are up on the screen here. You could be thinking, should I date him or her? Should I get married? What job should I do? Should I change my job? Where should I live? And which kind of car should I buy? There's so many choices that might be facing you right now. I want to say that actually turning to Jesus and gaining his wisdom will help you make these decisions with clarity. Isn't it true to say that most people in the world go through life with a certain lack of clarity in their lives? But turning to God actually helps with that. Having your compass set in a clear direction is going to make a big difference. So before we turn to what Josh said, 7 points about how to make decisions by looking through the Bible, can we do a bit of a survey of some of the ways that different people make decisions outside of turning to God's wisdom? How do normal people make decisions? Here's a couple of options. You could listen to your heart, which is almost just a joke now, you know, but people actually do make decisions this way. You say, I could do A, I could do B. Which one does my heart want the most? But if you kind of have thought about the things of God a little bit before, you will realize that the heart is deceitful. And this goes to the very center of how you view the world. Are humans innately perfect and good, and we just need to tap into the goodness inside of us? Or is there something mucked up inside of us that comes out alongside moments of goodness as well? The Bible would teach very clearly that actually our heart is deceitful and wicked above all things. We need to be wary of what our heart wants. Now, becoming a Christian, you get a new heart. God starts to act on your desires and your heart starts to change. And yet, always in this life remains with us something broken inside, something that's not quite right. So we need to be careful about making decisions exactly the way that everyone else does. Here's a variation on listen to your heart. Anyone know this person? This is Marie Kondo. She made waves a little while ago with all of her cleaning up stuff. Do you know the framework she gives, right? You've got a piece of clothing in front of you, and the question is, should I chuck it or should I keep it? And her question is, does it spark joy? That's how she calls you to make decisions. Lots of people do still make decisions more broadly in life by asking this kind of a question. Which one makes me more excited? Which one is more appealing to me? Which one brings joy? See, that is one way to make decisions, but I would like to offer that it won't take you that far in life. People who have really sat on this question, read lots of books, been really smart about it, often come up with a framework kind of like utilitarianism. You might not know the word, but you're probably familiar with the idea. You've probably done this before. You say, what decision should I make? I'm going to make the one that maximizes my pleasure and minimizes my pain. Now, you can do this in terms of society more generally. You say, let's run our society according to the principle of maximizing pleasure for all, minimizing pleasure for all. But people also do this internally, individually. Which one is going to make me have the most pleasurable experiences? Which one is going to minimize the pain? And to be honest, as I was kind of doing some introspection on how I sometimes make decisions, a variation on this is that I just choose the safest option. I just choose the option that's least likely to lead to a painful experience. Is that you too? I just choose the safest option. But that will only take me so far in life. Sometimes you do need to step into difficult decisions to make progress in what you're doing. This is all just worldly wisdom. You don't need to turn to the Bible to see that. That actually, if you just wrap yourself in kind of bubble wrap, eventually you can't feel anything at all. Your experience of humanity is pretty limited. And we need to do better than just these regular approaches to decision making. Good news is that if you've got the Bible in one hand and you're leaning into God's wisdom for your life, you can do so much better than the way that everybody else makes decisions. See, being a Christian dramatically changes the way that you make whatever choice it is that's in front of you today when you walked into church. Can I give you one more option that sounds a little bit more like the Christian option? And it's the Bible flicking option. Have you heard this one before? People genuinely make decisions this way. An example of it might be like this. You say, okay, I've got a yes-no decision in front of me. Should I say yes to that date? Should I get married to him? Should I get that apartment? You've got a yes-no question in front of you. So what you do is you flick open the Bible to a random page. You pick a random part of the page. And you just read down looking for the first yes or the first no. And you take that to be God's will for your life. And I want to say, guys, we can do so much better than that. I appreciate the spirituality of what you're going for. Can I try and, if you're leaning into how do Christians make decisions, I've got 7 suggestions for you tonight. Some of them might hit you more directly than others. Can I start with a broad principle? And that is to ask the question, what am I here for in the first place? See, if you know where you're going, if you know the actual purpose of existing, it'll help you make decisions. Most people don't know the purpose for existing. Most people that I talk to in 2024 in this part of Sydney have given up on ever identifying anything as the meaning of life. You catch this in kind of old pop culture, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I know it's a bit old. They make this like massive machine and it's like the smartest machine in the whole world. And so they say, oh, well, let's give it the hardest question in the whole world. What's the meaning of life? And it spits out a silly answer. Do you know it? 42. And what it's tapping into is the idea that there is no way to know the meaning of life. It is unknowable. And the best that you can do is to invent a meaning for yourself, which is good until that meaning actually gets tested and then you realize, it's not a real meaning for my life, I just invented it, and it doesn't hold you up at all. I am confused why Christians haven't stepped in at this point. Because when I read the Bible, I think we do have the meaning of life. This will help you make decisions. There are many places in the Bible that point to it. Let me give you one of them. Isaiah chapter 43, verse 7 should come up on the screen. It says, everyone who's called by my name, whom I created for my glory, whom I formed and made. What's the meaning of life according to this verse? It's living for God's glory. That might be a difficult one to swallow, to say that the meaning of my life is to live for someone else's glory. But it's actually way more solid than finding the meaning of your life internally. The meaning of your life is to live for His glory. How would that affect your decisions if you deeply internalized it? Some people at this stage will object and say, gee, God sounds a bit up Himself. God sounds like a bit of a knob, that He makes everything about His own glory. And that's a very reasonable thing to say. Like if you did that, if I did that, that would make me egocentric, wouldn't it? Because I am not the greatest thing in the universe. It's just that it changes when you actually are the greatest thing in the universe. Think about it this way. God could point you to your meaning in life in anything that He's made. He could say, make your life about this thing that I made. But that would be to sell you and I short. ultimately, God does the most loving thing, which is to point you to the greatest thing in your life, in his creation. He didn't even create himself. I don't know how to say this. It would be unloving for God to point you to something that he created. The most loving thing to do is for him to tell you the truth, which is that you're a creation, he is the only creator, and your life finds its ultimate meaning in taking its position in the universe where it was given as going for his glory. Now, how would that change your decisions? At the very least, you wouldn't say, which decision will give me the most glory? Which decision will lead to my advancement in the eyes of the world? You would say, which decision leads to his? Which decision leads to his glory? That's the first principle for how to make decisions. I got a couple more. Let's go to number two. This is the one that Hugh read out for us before. Way underused passage in terms of working out what we should do and how we should live. Which is more loving to God and to my neighbor? This is a great way to make decisions. Not all decisions are this simple, but this is a good principle to put in at the start of your decision making. Which of these options is the most loving to God and to my neighbor? Notice who's not the priority in this verse. It's not what's the most loving, beneficial thing for. It's all about God and your neighbor. This is the transformed stuff that starts to happen to you when the Holy Spirit truly is working in your heart. Can we go over those verses? He said, of all the commandments, which is the most important one? He wants the summary. He wants the cheat notes. He says, the most important one, answered Jesus, is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And the second is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. He finishes by saying there's no commandment greater than these. This is a great way of thinking about what job you should do, for example. Pick a job that is loving to your neighbor. If you have a job, if you have a choice between a job that, you know, is a little bit helpful to other people and another job that is really helpful and will make other people's lives much better, then you've got at least some biblical backing for saying, maybe I'll take that one. Which job would be most loving to God and to your neighbor? Obviously, don't choose one that would be unloving to God by being against his laws. But within that, one of the great ways to choose to say which one is more loving to my neighbor. We've done 2 out of 7. Are you tracking with me so far? Those ones are big principles, and we're going to get more and more specific. Let me give you a specific thing that you can do if you are facing a decision right now, and that is number 3, look for good advice. Here's the thing where you don't make decisions on your own. I had a youth minister once, and he used to say that the Christian life is not a one-player game. And that's entirely true. We are a community, and part of what it looks like to be a community is to give each other advice. If your version of community is please affirm everything I do and then step back, get out of the way, you've got something of community, but you haven't got it. True community, what it looks like to actually belong here, is that somebody might come in from the side and say, hey, I've just observed some things, and I've got, I think with my Bible open and my love lens towards you, I've got some things to say. And they might actually help you make your decisions. Can we have a look at Proverbs chapter 11? It says, for lack of guidance, a nation fails, but victory is won through many advisors. It's military language. Victory is won through many advisors. And this pushes back against the whole individualism thing. Have you realized that the water in which you swim is individualistic water? If you were born in another country right now, you might not be swimming in that kind of water. You'd be swimming in collectivist water, where you all think kind of together and other people are much more involved in your decision-making process. But because we live in this part of the world, we've just assumed individualism, but you step into a real community. And actually, sometimes people are your allies in working out what you should do. No person is an island, neither are you. Can I tell you how Phil, who just stepped into doing a traineeship at church here, she was saying the choice became obvious with the help of people speaking into my life. Other people were encouraging her, and that was part of the decision-making process. So this is the icon that I chose for today's sermon. If you can forgive the fact that the index finger seems to be like super weird and long, I really like it because it's kind of identifying the fact that there's, you know, lots of different options sometimes, and you just need to pick one, and actually going forward with some decisiveness is a helpful way to do it. But if we were just thinking about getting good advice, then maybe the icon would look something like this. This is one way to make great decisions as a Christian because you're surrounded by other Christians. I think you get the point. Shall we move on to number four? Four out of seven. I want you to adopt an eternal lens. An eternal lens. I realized the other day that pretty much every time I get up here to preach from the Bible, I end up talking about eternity and heaven and hell at some point. And I think that's on purpose. I think a lot of churches have underplayed that recently. But if you strip out eternity from the Bible, then all you're left with is some kind of manual about how to live this life. But we're not meant to only care about this life. We're meant to reverse engineer our lives in light of the life that is to come. We're meant to adopt the idea when we're making decisions, how will I view this decision when I'm looking back at it from the perspective of eternity? Because life right now feels pretty long, right? Some of us in this room, you maybe have lived kind of 15, 20% of your life. Some of the people in this room, you might have lived 60, 70% of your life, maybe. Life feels kind of long, and yet from the perspective of eternity, this life is so short. If you will internalize eternity, it will change the way that you make decisions. For these next couple, I wanted to show you, particularly from 1 Corinthians, which was our recent series, some of the choices and decisions that Paul was offering there. So if we turn to 1 Corinthians, this is where we'll hang out for the next little while. Let me give you an example of eternal decision-making by Paul. He's talking about whether or not you should get married, which is a question and a choice that many of us in the room will one day grapple with or have grappled with. And he says this, the time is short. What he means is life is short. Life is like a blip compared to eternity. The time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they did not, those who mourn as if they did not, those who are happy as if they were not, those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep. Next slide. Those who use the things of this world as if not engrossed in them, for because this world in its present form is passing away. So you're facing a decision about this world. And isn't it helpful to realize that this world in its present form is passing away? It does take a little bit of the pressure off your decision making, because you're like, this doesn't affect eternity. It does affect maybe up to the next 80, 90 years or something, but it doesn't affect eternity. It takes some pressure off, and it helps you to make your decisions with perspective. Do you notice that line there? It says, you use the things of this world as if not engrossed in them. You do have to make decisions about living. You do have to like get a roof over your head. You have to pay someone rent or buy a place or something. You have to do it. But we're not engrossed in these things. Our life's purpose and goal is not to get a really nice property, because firstly, that's impossible in today's economy. And secondly, that was never the thing, even if you were a boomer and you could do that. Those who use the things of the world as if not engrossed in them, this world in its present form is passing away. That's principle number four, make decisions in light of eternity. I've got three more. Are you tracking with me? You doing all right? Let's talk about doors. Doors. This is how Paul made decisions about his travel plans in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. I want you to notice a couple of things about these verses. He says, I will stay on at Ephesus until Pentecost because a great door for effective work has opened to me and there are many who oppose me. First thing to notice, there are many who oppose him. Sometimes people find a little bit of opposition to their decision and they say, well, it can't have been God's will for my life then. But sometimes if you're following Jesus, it might actually increase the opposition to what decision you make. There might be an easier way. There might be a broader path. But Jesus' path is narrow. Not many find that way. And it might increase the amount of opposition to the decisions that you make. Particularly if you have parents or family who are not into the Christian thing. They might go, what kind of a decision is that? And the answer is, with love and respect, it's like, oh, it's a different decision from the one you'd make because I'm actually starting to follow Jesus. And I know you're not, and respectfully, this is actually what I think God would have for me. Sometimes being a Christian will increase the amount of opposition to your choices. Notice, too, what kind of work he was particularly excited about doing. What kind of a door is it that he's searching for? He's looking for a door for effective work. He's not looking for a door for the utilitarian version of life, maximize pleasure, minimize pain. He's like, I want to be used by God. I want to do effective gospel proclamation work. I want to see people around me get saved. I want to see people around me get matured in their faith. I've got something more to do in life than just build up an accumulated pile of stuff. He says, a great door for effective work has opened to me. Do you like the idea there of a door? Do you get it? Like you kind of what? Like you kind of in a room or something and there's a door and you go up to it and sometimes you'll turn that knob and you think this is the way God wants me to do. You'll turn that knob and it won't go because it's a locked door. At which point it makes you reevaluate what you're thinking. It helps us write our plans in pencil and actually be responsive to when things don't open that you thought were going to open. Sometimes you very tentatively push on something and you're like, oh, that opened more than I thought it would. This idea of doors I find deeply compelling about how to think about your life's decisions. Can I tell you what Pete, our kids minister, said when I was talking to him in the office? He said, we keep on pursuing options that we think are right until God opens or closes a door. I thought that was really real. I like that. One of the other things that reminds me of about making decisions and making choices as a Christian is what James says about all this kind of stuff. Still on the idea of doors. He says, now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to that city, spend a year there, carry on business, make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. I like this because it says, actually, as much as I spend time thinking about my decisions, as much as it's right that we really consider them, get good guidance on them, we are still responsive to God and his changes of plan. It helps you to make your plans in pencil and actually not even to take yourself that seriously. On top of that, some people do have this idea that there is only one path for my life and I have to walk through it. But actually, this connects to our sixth point, which is that sometimes there's many options for what we could do. Sometimes both choices might be okay. Can I give you an example of that in 1 Corinthians where it's 6 out of 7? You're doing well tracking with me. Now, this is a very specific case study of the big principle that sometimes both decisions are okay. I'm trying not to get caught up on the language of like virgins and stuff here. It's just talking about whether or not you should get married, particularly to the person that they were kind of engaged to, or they kind of had a plan to marry them. So verse 36, if anyone's worried that he might not be acting honorably towards the virgin he's engaged to, and if his passions are too strong and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. And you're like, wow, is that the Bible's teaching on on what decision I make? I should do as I want. There are obviously limits on that. But he should do as he wants. It keeps on saying he's not sitting, they should get married. But here's the thing. The other alternative would also be okay. Verse 37, the very next verse. But the man who settled the matter in his own mind, who's under no compulsion, but has control over his own will, and who's made up his mind not to marry the virgin, this man also does the right thing. Can you see the principle at play here? That sometimes both decisions are okay. Sometimes you actually do just get to choose. Sometimes God gives you the freedom, and he's not saying, hey, there is one way that I've mapped out for your life, and you must take this fork here, and then there's a little left shuffle, and then a big step, and if you miss any of those things, the whole thing goes boom, that actually sometimes there's a bit of flexibility there. God has some very big priorities for your life. He wants you to get saved. He wants you to follow him. He wants you to choose his way as much as you can in each decision. But there are some moments when actually both decisions might be okay. And you just have the freedom to choose. And this frees us from being kind of all tied up and locked up. And that's why I love this icon here. See, a square is not a circle, is not a triangle. They are genuinely different options, but you do get the option to choose in some cases. Sometimes both decisions are okay. Can I walk you back through the six things I've said so far, and I'll say one more thing to preview next week. I want to say, in making decisions, you want to ask yourself, what am I here for? In making decisions, you want to ask yourself, what is more loving, not just for me, but to God and to my neighbor? In making decisions and facing choices, you want to take advice from other Christians with their Bible open and a heart of love towards you. In making decisions, can I encourage you to adopt an eternal perspective? What will make sense when you look back at it with the lens of eternity? Sometimes God will open and shut doors, and so we have a bit of flexibility in how we react to these things. And sometimes, number six, both choices are okay. Can I give you my final one? I'm going to push into what we're doing next week with Meet Jesus at this point. There is one decision that is actually the most crucial decision for you, and it will inform all of your other decisions. And I'm aware that there are quite a few of us in the room, actually. If you think I'm talking directly to you, I'm actually not. There's quite a few of us in the room right now who have been kind of back and forth on whether I'm going to actually commit to this Jesus thing. And I want to say that this is the most crucial decision of your life. Because it will affect not just the next 70, 90, 20 years of your life. It will affect your eternity. How we react to what Jesus did on the cross will determine whether when Jesus comes back that judgment day goes incredibly poorly or incredibly well for you. And I would love to spend the rest of my life just standing up here giving little TED Talks that are going to help you live your life a little bit better and be 3% happier. But more than that, I would love to spend the next whatever years of my life standing up here and pointing you to the thing that we all lose sight of all the time, which is that eternity's coming, and how we react and how the people around us react to the good news of Jesus actually does determine that. Jesus died on the cross in your sins for as your substitute. And I would urge you to take that on. Maybe this week, as we approach Meet Jesus, might be a great time for you to sit down and think to yourself, am I for real about following Jesus, or have I just kind of flopped around on it for a bit? And maybe next week might be a really significant one for you. Would you like to pray with me, Ben? Do you guys want to come sing? God, help us to trust in your guidance. God, please draw many people to yourself. God, I pray that anything helpful that happens tonight would stick with us. Anything unhelpful would just fall to the floor. God, I pray that you'd help us to be people who make decisions that are really, genuinely different from the world around us. That we would live from the ground up as Christians, as followers of you, and that when persecution comes or when people think we're a little bit off because of that, that you would help us to have kindness as well as conviction. Help us to make choices that actually glorify you, that actually love our neighbor. Help us to see things with the perspective of eternity. And everyone who agreed said,